Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, Andy Serkis is set to direct and star in a new film called The Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum. Looks like Peter Jackson and the other writers for the Lord of the Rings movies, and I think the Hobbit movies, are going to be involved. I think Peter Jackson is the producer. Yeah, I made a video about this on my Instagram page, and my reel got cut off. I had more things to say about it, but I got cut off, and I didn't feel like re-uploading the entire video because I figured we'd cover it here on the podcast. But okay, so this is supposed to come out in 2026. And for those of you who aren't aware, don't really know much about Lord of the Rings past the movies, there was a little chunk of time where Aragorn and Gandalf were looking for Gollum. You know, there's like that part in Fellowship of the Ring where he's like, I looked everywhere for the creature Gollum, but the enemy found him first, you know?
Right, and it shows him just like going to Minas Tirith and like smoking in the basement or whatever.
Yeah, so in the second chapter of Fellowship of the Ring, Gandalf basically explains to Frodo, like, all right, here's what happened. Like, Bilbo took the ring, and then Gollum was so mad about it that he like left the cave to go look for it. Or not cave, totally. Like he left the underside of the Underdark under the Misty Mountains. He said that like the quote was something like he hated sunlight most of all. He even like braved the sunlight to go find the ring because he wanted it so bad. So like Gollum was kind of like skulking around looking for the ring, and then like when Gandalf kind of figures out like this ring is more important than he thought it was before, he tries to go track down basically what's been going on with this ring, and he wanted to go find Gollum. That's how he hooked up with Aragorn. So it looks like they're gonna make this into a movie, and I had mixed feelings about it in my my Instagram video. So the part that got cut off with that video, so I'm gonna kind of flip this around a little bit. The part that got cut off was that I am excited to see more of Andy Serkis working on Gollum. I like his depiction of Gollum. I think he does a great job at it. And then like digging into the relationship between Gandalf and Aragorn during that journey, kind of like seeing, like, I think that at one point, I could be getting my wires crossed here, but I think at one point, like, Gollum was picked up by the elves, but then he, like, escaped, and then he got picked up by Sauron's forces and then was let loose.
Totally. Gollum even reacts to the elvish rope, right?
Yeah, he had quite the adventure, to say the least. But and obviously they're not going to get Viggo Mortensen and Ian McKellen because they're like way too old for those roles now,
right?
But it would be cool to dig into that a little bit. But one thing that I did mention in that video is just like, really, we're doing Gollum? Like, can we? There's like a lot of stuff to do. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's so much in the world. I also find it very odd that like they would pick that character to kind of focus on, and maybe he's just kind of the leading charge as far as like the plot, and then we'll really focus on like Gandalf and Aragorn, because I don't want the main character that I'm following to be Gollum, right? He's not dynamic enough. The guy's like a drug addict that allowed his life to become horrific in this, and like eating people, living in like the bottom, like forgotten tunnels of this like old dwarven, now orcish, like stronghold, right? It's like his life is terrible.
But
and
it's not even his fault. It's the ring's fault.
I know. But, you know, he's still left, you know, and that's, I guess it's a pretty good treatise, or maybe this is just like, you know, especially pertinent in my life. But he leaves, you know, the lengths that he'll go to, right? Horrific things to try to get that heroin ring back is quite impressive and leads him even to more darkness. I just don't know what they're going to make. And maybe they did that on purpose so they wouldn't have all the Lord of the Ring fans being like, well, you got this wrong and you got that wrong. They're like, let's see, what's the most unwritten about section?
It's in the appendices. Like, it's touched on for sure. I think there's like a, in the Book of Lost Tales, I think it digs into it a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I've cooled down a little bit since because I like read the news and I was like, it's time to make a video about this. So like, I don't know. I've kind of cooled on my opinion about it. I do think like some stuff, I don't know. Way the rights for all the Lord of the Rings stuff are just, it's so all over the place. Like Warner Brothers has some stuff through like the Embracer Group, but then like Amazon got some stuff through like the Tolkien estate, and some people have some things and some people don't have other things. But like some stuff with like Durin, like the dwarves and stuff, like Durin's folk, I should say, like the dwarves, like the Fëanor stuff from the Silmarillion, just Tom Bombadil even would have been kind of cool, like to kind of dig into that a little bit. But also, okay, I'm going to be real for a second.
Hit us.
Like, obviously, they're going to do what's going to make them money. And like, what's the most like recognizable possible character they could use to get asses in seats?
Gollum.
Like, yeah, probably Gollum. So
totally.
It's fine. I don't know. I like, as much as I do like the Andy Serkis portrayal of Gollum, I think it's pretty spot. I think it's really good. I don't know if anybody could have done it better in a motion capture suit, honestly. But like, I also,
he brutalized his body for that.
I feel like Gollum's too cute, you know? Like, right. he's too like
Baby Yoda.
But that's also, he's not quite Baby Yoda.
No, but, of course not. Yeah.
But like, but also, that is kind of like one of the things about Gollum is like, he's got like this kind of split persona of like this kind of whimsical, curious steward, I think is what he was beforehand, where he, you know, he's kind of like not so very different from a hobbit once at one point. So there's like that, but it's like he's kind of like constantly in this battle with the very ugly side of himself that the ring has like twisted into a very manipulative, like, he's a really interesting character for sure.
He's very pitiable.
But we already kind of like nailed all of that in the Lord of the Rings movies. So it's like, are we really treading that ground again?
And we know how that story ends. So yeah. Like, what's the point? Kind of.
I don't know.
No, I'm kind of with you. You're just kind of filling in gaps maybe for the sake of money, but hopefully it's got heart to it.
I feel like there's a trend on this podcast of us seeing stuff that we're kind of disappointed and annoyed about, but we always come to a conclusion where we're like, well, we're going to pay money to go look at it, obviously.
Totally.
So.
Totally. Yeah. Complain though we may.
You know what?
I'm still going to give him my money.
That is a tried and true tradition with any nerd. And I dare you to try to change it, everybody.
Yeah. Well, let's talk for a second before we move on from that about the War of the Rohirrim movie that's coming out December 13th of this year.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard it pronounced that way. I think it's
Rohirrim?
Rohirrim?
Wow. What? Oh, wow. Well, I think I'm using the Jewish pronunciation. Because Im is pluralizes the end of the Jewish word.
So,
like Goyim, you know?
Yeah, like that part at the, you know, in Return of the King, where Aemir is like Rohirrim, like, yeah, it's Rohirrim. But anyway,
I've been saying it wrong for a long time. Yeah, and that's coming out on December 13th. Have you watched the trailer?
No, there's a trailer.
There is one. There's a teaser trailer, actually.
Maybe I'll watch it later. Yeah,
I've watched.
I don't want to watch it right now. I want
to
watch.
No, you don't have to.
By myself in a dark room under a naked light bulb.
But you know, I hope that that's not neutered by people, whether by the rights thing, right? I think that really throws a wrench into a lot of this. Like, I have the rights, and there's like this storied past of people trying to maintain the soul of Tolkien's story, and they want to do it for like Tolkien would have wanted this. And then there's other people who say that who like obviously are incentivized because they hold the rights and they don't want to. It's like, I don't know where I stand on that, but I know that I stand and like mistakes were made.
I don't know.
Because it seems like everywhere people own parts of a story. That's ridiculous.
Just make it cool though. I mean, like, you don't have to have all the rights to make it good, you know, like,
right.
You can make stuff up that's just as engaging as anything else. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, look at the, like a good example is the Fallout show. Like, I don't know if you watched it yet.
I have. We're going to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll segue us right into your week actually. But like, so like the Fallout show, you know, like it's not like they were doing like a one-to-one remake of Fallout 3. I mean, it's a little similar, but it's like they're doing their own thing with it.
Right.
But it's like, there's no, like, Bethesda would be rolling in their graves right now if they like.
Right.
It's just like, they're doing their own thing with it. It's got the essence of it. That's all I want. That's all I care about is like, if it's got the essence of it and you've managed to give me an engaging story with cool characters, then do what you will with it. I don't care if there's contradictions or I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Yeah. I think more that my statement was of like that may have led some of their, some of their creative decisions as to like why they're making content in this area or some things that are not. Okay. Kind of, 'cause it limits their ability to be free with how they present some of the world and what parts of it they can or can't. And I think that's kind of frustrating from someone who loves all of the story to know that like our creators are limited to only a part of it is like, ugh, lame.
Yeah, but then you also don't need to have, you know, there's different extremes of it where it's like, you also don't need to have like this guy walking into a fiery landscape and then have like a PowerPoint like the Westlands and then like fade into the Mordor like
thing. Totally.
Like, it's just that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about where it's like, oh, you did that in a bad way. You could, that was just bad, like a bad effort, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that was like tacked on.
And I think, I hope anyway, that we've had enough failures in that industry by big name people making big name stories that this kind of fall flat on their face because it was so obviously done for the purpose of milking the brand that like those in those positions of power that can make some of those decisions are like, actually, we make more money when we keep the soul of the story in. So like, let's do that.
Yeah, you know? Like look at The Last of Us, you know, like yeah, that's exactly that game, you know, and like, totally. Like I said, Fallout. But like, I mean, Peter Jackson, Fran Welsh, like we've got the heavy hitters in here writing the script and producing it and stuff. I mean, those Hobbit movies, we've talked them to death on here, but I will say those Hobbit movies, the Blu-ray editions of those Hobbit movies have been sitting in my save for later on Amazon for like 6 months now, and I'm getting closer to putting them in my cart, you know.
You should
like
jump. Man, you should jump. I rewatched them like, I don't know, a couple months ago, and it was like I had a lot of like wrong things in my head about it that I allowed to accumulate over the years, and my perception of like the reality of those movies is like, I think I was comparing them to the best piece of cinematic like thing that has ever been created, which was the Lord of the Rings movie, and that's maybe unfair because like nobody's gonna do it that good. So if you look at them alone, I think with time my opinion has tempered a little bit, and I really enjoyed them.
They just look weird.
They look weird. Really weird. Yeah,
like it's just they were like trying out some new like hyper clear like camera, and it's like
totally
like looks like they like just sprayed it with Formula 409, you know. Like it's totally, just too totally. Clean it looks weird,
right, know? And it's like armor, especially an orc's armor, like wouldn't be that shiny, like
it's very shiny movie. But yeah, that's enough of the Lord of the Rings talk. To tell me about your week, how you been,
dude? I'm gonna start off with Fallout. You know, the week's been pretty good. I've had some fun things going this week. Lots of reading, which we'll get to, and then lots of watching. Man, I've been telling you that I've been going to catch up with the Fallout for a little bit while here, and I finally did. And I watched the first episode and was just like,
it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. And I really like, I've played the games as extensively as you. In fact, I've never played the games, but I've watched them being played. So I kind of like know a little bit about what they're about. Does the storyline follow, like, who do you play, I guess? My question is, who do you play as in the game?
So it's interesting. Like, I haven't finished the show yet, but I've watched more episodes. And it's just, it's funny because, like, when it first started on the first episode, for the first, like, half of the first episode, I was like, wow, they're really going in their own, really doing their own thing. And then it's like, the main character needs to go find their parent. And I was like, okay,
we're back on track.
That's like basically the
meat's
plot of
back on the menu, boys.
That's fine. We're looking for a family member again, but that's fine. It's just, you know, whatever.
I wonder if you'll disappoint us in a major way later. I don't know.
Yeah, like as for the character though, I mean, you would basically be playing the Lucy character in Fallout 3 and in Fallout New Vegas. You would have been a silent protagonist. You know, but in Fallout 4, they changed it to like you're like this guy or this woman, or but yeah, that you would be kind of like traipsing across the wasteland, like getting into all sorts of different conversations and shenanigans and stuff.
So you leave the vault, you like start in the vault
in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. Yes, I haven't played. Well, I played a little bit of Fallout 2, like the old PC game, but I haven't played the first Fallout game. But yeah, so in Fallout New Vegas, you don't start in a vault. You start in like some guy's house.
Okay. Are some of the story plot twists that we won't mention specifically, obviously, for spoilers' sake, but there's some plot twists that you kind of learn some of the whys of things. Is that what you're uncovering throughout the course of the game?
Yeah, and I think that what they're doing with like the different factions and stuff and like what the Brotherhood of Steel is all about and like not only just like what they're all about, but like the nuance of like why they're kind of weird too, and like why, like not like the cool thing about Fallout, at least the thing that it seems like a lot of people really like about Fallout, is that there's no like 100% clear like side to be on in anything, you know. And it's just, there's just factions, and it's just like with like your abilities and stuff. Right. It's like a typical like character building RPG where it's like, even in D&D, where it's like, okay, you get this attribute, but then there's also like this kind of negative thing that happens with it too. So you get plus 10 firepower with arrows or something, but it degrades your health by this many points or something like that.
Right.
I feel like they kind of like extend that out to the factions too, where it's like, yeah, you could join the Brotherhood of Steel,
right,
and like,
right,
this cool thing could happen, but also this horrible ideology is kind of in there too, you know? So like,
right, you could be a wizard, but you're going to be limited to cloth armor and you're going to be able to not take any damage, you know?
Right, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I think like down to really specific things, like the way that certain things work. I think in the last episode I mentioned that like stim packs just heal you really quickly in the game, so they
I
made
actually
it...
really like that.
Dude, it's so funny how like they just made it so it's
very self-aware.
It's just like this instant heal. Yeah, and I like the humor in it too. I think Lucy, the main character, is so funny. Because like she's so awesome, but she's also like, she's like this perfect mix of totally naive but really capable,
right,
too. And it's just so funny to like see her kind of like stumble into situations and like get out of them in these interesting creative ways, but also like just kind of be not behind the ball like 100% of the time either. And it's so great. Yeah,
right,
it's
right,
so cool.
Yeah, she stumbles along, she learns some like cool things, she's like open-minded enough to see like the things that she really loves, to then like see the truth when she fully gets the full story. Again, I'm flirting with spoilers, so I won't go too far into that, but she's open-ended enough. You kind of see her character progression of like, oh, it's not all black and white, there's some other things happening here. And then you kind of see her become like get angry and be like, well, I'm going to fight for right, what is right now, and kind of screw everybody else. And I kind of like that arc a lot, you know, her going from like just kind of being nice to everybody to then being like, wow,
that's how you survive out there though, man. It's like, it's not the same as the vaults. And like, what, and this isn't spoiling. I don't think this is spoiling anything. You know what? No, I'm just going to be safe and not say it actually. Cause there's like a thing about the vaults that you find out in the games. I don't know if you find it out. Yeah, you probably find it out eventually in the show, but it's just like, it's just not what it seems to be. You know what I mean? And well, like what I really like is that they kind
of
touch on this idea that I think that the shopkeeper in like the second episode says something to this effect of like, the vaults were just holes for rich people to hide in, you know, which I thought that was just so brilliant. It's like, that's just exactly how it would go down too. Like, but I think that it was like a lottery system or something.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
like
it was like a lottery system.
Might even get worse than that.
I can't remember exactly the details with Vault Tech. I think it might have been a money thing. Or like if you were like part of the service.
I really thought that, like, you know, sometimes we complain about books. We think like these two, you have really good insights here of being able to be like, these two characters were so similar. It seemed like a waste of space on the page. They should have been combined into one. And like, you know, we try not to rewrite people's stories, but there's been a few times that I've been like, man, you're so right. This was some bloat to the story, mm-hmm, because these two characters were like the same one, kind of learning the same things, doing the same things slightly differently. And I really appreciated about this show was that like, all three of the storylines, all had a unique thing to bring to the table
thing
and a unique perspective.
Yeah.
But like, they have their Venn diagram of like motivations and like and value systems cross over enough that like when you start learning about their history, they're like, oh, cool, that's why they're kind of tied to each other in this way.
so cool.
And then you have the ghoul, Walter Goggins plays him, who just, I don't even think he has a name. He's just like the ghoul.
I think his name was Cooper.
Cooper, okay. He has such an interesting perspective, and it's like, I haven't quite figured out whether or not this show will be his redemption arc or his, because obviously life's handed him a rough hand and he's very resentful and like doesn't really care about life at all at the beginning of the show. And I'm not sure if I can say that that's changed by the end, but like your personal redemption, you know?
I'm excited to finish it up. I need to keep watching it.
Tell me before we move on, what are the ghouls? They never really explained that part of the story, and I don't really... So is it just like he just took a lot of radiation and thus he can now live forever, but he has to take this stuff every few weeks?
So to my understanding, the ghouls have been they're people that were so radiated that it kind of like pushed them past the point of it killing them. You know what I mean? Like it radiated them so much that it like elongated their life and like turned the... Yeah, they're kind of almost...
Okay, they became radiation
to
creatures.
It and... at least that's like my understanding of it. And then there's like feral ghouls who are like, they've kind of like lost all of their humanity basically. I guess so. Yeah. But it's like, not, they're not quite
like zombies
because they never like, I don't think they ever technically died, you know? That's just like they were just over radiated. I think I can't remember exactly
what the
lore is behind the ghouls.
Well, it's like a time thing. If they don't get this like juice or whatever, there's something that cures them, this curative vial of fluid that we don't really know what it is. If they don't get that regularly, then it seems like their transition, because they'll start like, rah, rah, like freaking out from time to time. You're like, okay, that person's obviously struggling with themselves to maintain control, and then eventually they get to a point where they no longer have it and they just go feral.
Yeah, I think I remember something about the lore where like the government or something was like experimenting on people with radiation to like try to get them to see if they could.
That's even touched on.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So, yeah.
But not directly, yeah. Not with people so much as it is with animals, and they explain, but obviously that's where it's going.
Yeah, the thing with Fallout is like nothing is what it seems, and everything's probably more messed up than you think it is. Like that's the what to take away from. Just don't take anything at face value with that show or with those games.
I really, really liked it. I thought, not knowing the video games or playing them heavily, I thought that regardless of how similarly they did it, which it sounds like they did a pretty good job, it's got the essence of it. Very entertaining. The stories are dynamic. There's lessons in there. There's all the things that I really like out of a good show or a good conversion. So I thought it was pretty well done. I really enjoyed it. Look forward to the next episode, actually, or the next season. There's also an element of wrapping up. Like sometimes shows and books do a bad job of ending a storyline in a satisfactory way, but leaving it open enough for more content, which is definitely coming. And this one did a good job of having like an inner arc within the overarching arc, which is obviously like not fully solved, but like there is a period on a lot of those sentences that allows it to end in a satisfactory way, unlike The Last of Us, which I know is designed to leave you empty and hollow.
Let's see if I watched anything else.
I appreciated that. Now, as far as
which I watched a lot of Fallout.
So I have been appreciated that. Now, as far as what I've been reading, let's see if I watched anything else. I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it, which I watched a lot of Fallout. Okay, so I picked up Empire of Storms again, and I think the focus, because we've decided like the week before that we're going to just kind of try to smash those out. Not only will it give us a little bit more clarity.
Which we didn't do a very good job of this week. Sorry, everybody.
We didn't, though I did do a good job of like reading it, but I'm not finished with it. So, yeah. I'm like halfway on back onto that on ramp of like, once we get here, we're just going to smash. And I'm warming myself up to it. And I definitely tasted it a little bit. And it was nice to not have the pressure, I guess, of like, got to finish it by this day. And I just kind of enjoyed it a little bit more and was able to I don't know, resonate with the characters, kind of what they're going through, as opposed to just being like, whatever, like
get this done. Yeah.
Resenting
that's
them
how
for
we
living
should
life.
Do it. Yeah, no, that's good. That's really cool.
Yeah. So I'm excited to keep that going. Hopefully we'll have a episode about that this week. Cause yeah, I'm back on the boat as far as reading that. I'm a little bit more than halfway through it. It's they're pretty big books, man.
Yeah. They're really long.
Yeah. Say one thing for Sarah J. Maas. She just, I don't know if she listened to anything that anyone told her to do. Cause I mean, they're so obviously written by her and what she wants to write, which I kind of respect. I have a huge amount of respect for somebody who's like,
hell yeah,
stays true to their, like, this is what I want to do. And I don't care at all what anyone else thinks. And I kind of respect that. It's very confident. The story is very confident.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm back on the wagon with Empire of Storms and stoked to continue reading it. I'm pretty far into Catherine Addison's The Goblin Emperor.
Hey, that's a really good book.
Yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it. Is it a standalone? I haven't like done any research on it.
I think that Addison did come out with a sort of sequel. I can't remember the name of it. I don't know if it's a sequel or if it's just in the same world. But yeah, I mean, I look at Goblin Emperor as a standalone.
Okay, cool, personally. Cool. Because that's what I wanted to when I started it. I was like, I don't want to involve myself in another series right now. That's really not what my life needs. I just want something that like has some depth to it and somebody overcoming like a situation. And that's exactly what I'm getting out of it so far. To those who have never heard about this book, the story kind of is, to summarize, is like the youngest half goblin son of the emperor who's lived his entire life basically in exile as like goblins. I don't really know the world super great yet, but it seems like goblins that aren't like your typical style of goblin. They just have like different colored skin, but they're hated on by the non-goblin side of things. And so he's kind of a redheaded stepchild of this emperor's son. And then very early on in the book, this is not spoiling anything, the entire family and like extended family of the emperor in power dies. And he is now, against everybody's expectation, put into the place of the heir who takes it all over. He's like entirely unprepared for this, as his like trajectory of his life was like kind of just cast to the side, get out of here. We don't want to think about you. You're an embarrassment to everybody. So he's totally unschooled in like the art of court politics, like no friends, no connections, no advisors or anything. And it seems like there's some hanky panky that happened with his father's death. And it seems like that person's probably not going to rest easy, knowing that that bloodline is still in power, since it seems like their whole goal was to get that bloodline removed. So we have a young protagonist who seems like got a real good core. Like he's just like morally sound, even though life has dealt him kind of a terrible hand, and he's just kind of been like shat on by everybody.
Yeah, he's a really fun character. Not fun.
He's
a very engaging character to read.
Engaging is a better word. But yeah, he's obviously struggling and he's doing a good job. And like, but also he's also making a ton of mistakes. So it's not like, wow, this guy's just some Mary Sue taking over and like doing everything around. It's like, no, he's making some mistakes and kind of bumbling along. But his growth as a character is like pretty cool and very well written. And I'm 100% here for it. I needed a story of someone overcoming like an insurmountable, unexpected problem. And that's exactly what I'm getting.
Yeah, it's a really good book. I've recommended it on my multiple pages multiple times. It's like cozy in its own way, but it's like the right kind of intrigue for me. Yeah. You know, especially because it's like so fish out of water, and it's so like you're in this really strange place, and like all the names are really confusing. And I guess Addison did it on purpose because you're supposed to feel the same way that this character does, of just like, I don't know, I don't understand like anything that's going on. I'm so out of my element. Because I remember like I wrote a Reddit post once. It was like one of my few Reddit posts on r/fantasy that I've ever put up.
Normally just quietly sit in anger on the sidelines.
And usually I usually lurk on Reddit, but I made this post when I was reading it years back, and I was like, why? I don't understand why these names are so confusing. And somebody was kind enough to tell me, like, hey, the reason these names are so confusing is because you're supposed to be as confused as the main character. You need to get that sense of, like, displacement. Like, I don't know. I don't
understand. This culture is not your culture.
Even down to, like, the way that people are named, it's so confusing, and I can't keep it straight.
Totally. While I think that's a really kind of excellent injection of here's how to feel what the character's feeling in that book, I don't typically like, nor do I accept the answer. And I've even been like guilty of being like, well, maybe it's for this reason, when I experience like this writing is really confusing and like not told to me well. And then someone's like, but like the author's trying to tell you like trying to get you to feel how the character's feeling. It's like, yeah, but they're just telling me a poorly told story. It's like, it shouldn't affect like I don't know. Sometimes I think there's it's a justification for like, you just like kind of didn't write very well in some of these things, you know? I don't know. The main thing of your story is to get me to care. And in order to care, I need to like understand it. And if I don't understand it, then like, I'm sorry, you didn't write a very good story, you know? Now, granted, sometimes I'm not the audience. Maybe it's way smarter than I'm capable of understanding. And so, you know, I'm not saying every book is for every person and I personally have to understand everyone. But like, sometimes it's very obvious that like, this book is just confusingly written and it's not actually helping me in the story. And I'm not like, oh my God, I resonate with the character so much. It's like, no, I don't even get what's going on. That's not an example of a really intelligent breaking of the fourth wall and like being all meta. No, this is an example of just like not putting a story together very well.
I don't know. It's hard to say because you're not in that person's brain. So
yeah, that's true.
Like,
but I am consuming that person's content and they wrote it.
Yeah, you do have your opinion about how you feel about it, though.
Yeah.
And you're entitled to that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I don't think that this book is doing that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because it makes me think of when I read The Terror by Dan Simmons. It's a very, very good book. I would totally recommend it to anybody that wants like a bad things happen on a ship in the 1800s kind of thing. It's like historical fiction, but it's like horror. But it's also like over 700 pages long. And it is a slog of a book for sure. Like it's very interesting. It's very cool. But like I was pretty fatigued with it. And it was another thing where I went online to check some reviews out and stuff. And I found myself on Reddit again. And somebody was like, this book took forever for me to read. It felt so long. And I was like, yeah, it did. And then somebody was like, well, Dan Simmons did that on purpose so that you'd feel like as closed in and claustrophobic as everybody. And I was like, really, though? Like, this could he have done it maybe with different words?
Or
fewer words, you know? Like, he sacrificed brevity for being a little bit meta. So I don't think that's what he
did. And like, you know? Like I said, the main, unless you truly wrote that story just for you, then like confusing your story to make me feel what the main character is feeling doesn't help me nor the main character really kind of navigate your story. You know, I don't know. I think sometimes people can take it a little bit deeper and be like, well, you weren't smart enough to understand it. And certainly, you know, I'm not always right on that front, but I think it definitely happens. But that's not what's happening here. And I think if there's one criticism that's kind of in that vein, is there's a lot of like these and thous and thoust, and like it's sometimes I'm just like, oh, like the sentence is cumbersome. And like, I can kind of be like, yeah, that maybe does make me feel like a fish out of water because I don't talk like that. But there's, I don't know, sometimes it's just annoying. It's like a character.
Yeah, there's a line for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a book reasonable. That's writing in like an accent sort of thing. You know, it's like, just tell me, don't have like the entire book, the character you're like writing, like using apostrophes to replace the missing letters that you're removing from every word in order to try to mimic an accent, which like doesn't really work. Like, try to write in an Irish accent. There's no way. Just everything. OI. Like, it's not gonna,
gotta look it's not weird. Gonna do
it. Yeah, it's a little weird. But Catherine Addison's The Goblin Emperor, I know it was sent to me by one of our readers, and I do not have the book with me, or else I would be able to look again at bookmark and tell you specifically a thank you who sent it to me. But if that's you, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying it, and it's awesome, and exactly what I wanted to read right now. I finished Bookshops and Bone Dust.
Hey, cool. What'd you think about it?
I really liked it. I really liked it. So I just, cool. It's exactly what I wanted. It seemed like Travis Baldry is kind of grown a little bit as a writer. His story was so much more, maybe not more, but you nailed it last week when you said he was able to give me a feeling of the environment and the setting that the story takes place in. I can taste the sea salt in the air, you know, sort of thing. I think it's a good representation of his growth as an author.
Absolutely.
And he's right there on the edge where an artist should be, pushing himself, but not so far out that he can't do the thing that he's trying to do. So like, go Travis Baldry. I'm really excited for what his career has in store, because I really, and I kind of hope he stays with the theme, like, not to box him in, but we need more stories like that in the world. And I think that a lot of people find a lot of solace in some of those feel good kind of
absolutely
stories. And man, I certainly did. So I would encourage him to triple down on what he's doing and just keep going for it, man. Because like, some people might be like, it's the same story told twice. And it's like, yeah, but sounds like every story, like, let's just, I like that story and I can keep reading about it for a long time. So like, keep going, Travis.
He's going for something else with it. Like, it is kind of like, there is a certain, like, let's build this thing up thing happening, but like, he's doing it for a different reason.
Yeah. You're right. And that's the good change. Like, change. Yeah. Add more depth to your story and give it some meaning. Mm-hmm. And that's really awesome. I will say that I was unexpectedly surprised and delightfully surprised that there was like a little romance kind of thrown in there.
Yeah, there was. I mean, there's a little bit of that in Lessons in Lattes too.
Yeah, way smaller, I feel like.
It's,
I don't know.
Small. Yeah,
it's pretty small. And it's pretty small in this too, but it was like kind of nice that it was in there. You know, I was like, oh, cool.
Absolutely.
He's kind of circling around the whole book, the theme of, yes, sometimes our pasts and even presents are riddled with mistakes that we've made. But that doesn't mean that you can't then use those mistakes to be some fertile soil for some seeds of growth and make goodness happen from your mistakes. Like, the mistakes don't have to be things that break you. They can be things that build you up and make you better when faced properly and not ignored or run away from or anything. And I think that this is, I kind of think that that's the theme that that Travis is circling around. That is, it's like, yeah, sometimes we make some mistakes in our past, but it can also lead to where we are in the present. And that can be a really beautiful thing that you, if you would go back in time, maybe you could fix it, but you wouldn't learn the lesson that you need to learn in order to become who you are today, which is like a force for good. So don't beat yourself up too hard, maybe, about some of those past mistakes, which was a great theme.
Yeah,
it was really awesome. So appreciated that one, Travis. Yeah, high five, man. You did a great job writing that book. If you're looking for something cozy and you enjoyed Legends and Lattes at all, or you didn't read Legends and Lattes, read that one first if you haven't, even though this is a prequel to that. But read that one first, then read this one, and I think you'll be very cozy. You'll get that hug of a story that you're looking for, because it was that for me.
Story.
And that is all that I read this week. I really like, I've been saying this for a few weeks now, but man, I've just been following my feet, kind of randomly pulling them off the shelf a little bit. Certainly that happened with The Goblin Emperor. I was like leaving my house one day and I was just like, the first book that I saw, and I was like, blue, I like blue. And then I like grabbed the book off and started reading it. And I'm a healthy chunk into it and couldn't be enjoying it more. So go my instincts. What have you been up to this week? Tell me all the things.
Yeah, man, I had a decent pretty decent reading week, actually.
I talked multiple times. I was like, I'm reading.
Yeah. Okay. So, so my reading has kind of taken a little bit of a hit because of writing so much, more so than I thought it was going to. And like, obviously I want to keep putting content up and stuff, and I like making videos and having things to talk about with you and stuff. And I just, it was slowed down so much because I'm focusing so much on getting this draft done. And, I just got my edits back from tour also. So now,
did you cry?
They were very good edits. My editor is single-handedly writing this book for me.
No, that's not true. But were they, like, how were they, like, presented? Because some people can be a little, like, calloused when they present some of that stuff, and it's, like, really hard to do it in a way that's,
she's
like,
amazing.
Loving.
Yeah, no, she's
good.
She, like, litters a bunch of compliments and stuff in
cool,
there.
Cool, good for her.
Yeah, which is, I even made a point of thanking her for that. Dude. But yeah, she's just, there's just so many parts of the manuscript where she's, it's just like, why did you write it like this? Just say this, you know. And it's like, oh my god, that's like a million times better than what I just did. Like, of course, because, you know, she went to college and does this as a career. And it's just, while I was looking at some of the edits, I was like, dude, why don't you write books? Like, you're like way better at this than I am.
You probably, yeah, would be, man. I remember this one time on that note, like, I sent a text to my brother or something, and then I was like, man, you respond really, like, short texts back. And he was like, dude, okay, this text that you sent to me that was like a CVS receipt, he's like, this is what you could have said. And he summarized the entire thing in like 14 words. And I was like, ooh. Yeah. And he's like, that's clear communication. And I was like, yeah, but mine's like pretty. And he's like, dude, but like, that's not the point of what we're doing right now. And, you know, we all have our own way of communicating and shouldn't be snubbed. But it was kind of a eye-opening, like, man, there's a better way to say what I said.
It's usually a better way. Yeah, I mean, she's been really great. A lot of the edits are pretty, we're kind of like in the late stage of the editing process for book one right now, so a lot of the edits were really granular, like, don't use a comma here, use a period, capitalize this letter, like that kind of stuff. And then, you know, some kind of like zoom out stuff, like, this is she supposed to know this right now, or like, let's dig into this a little bit more, or like, we could shorten this for pacing and stuff like that. So it's all like, it's not stuff that I'm going to be spending like hours and hours and hours on like one comment, which is what I was doing in the revision before this.
Totally. Yeah. Some of the little stuff, like a good example, I think, would be when you showed it to me first time and I was like, this character is using this character's first name and they don't learn it until later on in the book, you know,
that just that kind of stuff. But it's just a lot of littles, which is fine. I'm just gonna go through it one by one and fix stuff that I think needs fixing. And then the other thing too with editing is like, it's ultimately my book, so if there's stuff that, you know, if there's stuff that's like, I don't like this, it's like, well, I do, so I'm gonna keep
author's
it in there.
Prerogative.
Like, yeah. But yeah, so writing is definitely, I'm spending a lot of time on that, but I did get a lot of reading done. Like I was saying before, though, I'm kind of shifting my content just like a tiny bit. I'm still reading, obviously, for the podcast. I'm still reading books that I want to read, but I'm kind of moving over into graphic novels and comics. I kind of wanted to like shift over and just kind of, because I wanted to.
You were too close to it.
Well, okay, so there's, you're really catching on here. So a couple different reasons. So for one thing, reading graphic novels is really awesome, so that I can still get some cool stories in, but not be reading just like prose, like just, you know, the same exact thing that I'm working on right now.
Totally.
Graphic novels are a really awesome way to still read, but also stay stimulated in that way. Get
right,
the pages
inspired
to pile up on one side when they're getting fewer on the other side. Kind of that tactile kind of like sitting down and reading something, which is really awesome. But also like, there is something really great about being able to kind of like knock out a whole story in like one day.
Totally.
You know, so I read Day Tripper by two Brazilian authors. They're twin brothers named Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. This graphic novel, y'all, like, I've had time to like really, because I made a video about it like right when I finished it, and I think I got the gist of it, but I like really sat and like kind of meditated on it for a little bit. And Day Tripper is such an amazing graphic novel, y'all. It's about how we process our family and our career and death and dying and like the really tiny moments in life that are super important to us. And like, there's like this whole magical realism type angle that they took with it that just, it straddles that line between really weird but also really sentimental and really serious. And like, the art is amazing. It's just like, I can't say enough good things about it. Day Tripper by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba is one of the best graphic novels I've ever read. It's fantastic. Like, it's just I feel like it came to me in a part of my life where I was kind of struggling with not creativity really, but just like balancing meaning and like balancing like all these things that maybe don't seem as important. And I don't know, it's hard to really explain to somebody who hasn't read it, but man, I would just really, really recommend that book.
I have this idea in my head, and I think this is because I've only really been exposed to graphic novels like that, and haven't really like gone very deep down that tunnel at all. Mainly just the ones that would have been sent to me by our lovely audience. Primarily those have been like Berserk and similar like graphic novels of its ilk. So I have this idea in my head that graphic novels are like kind of jacked sometimes, and like they deal with like really serious things, and like it goes down. And is that this, or like tell me a little bit about the story and like the level of like seriousness.
I can't give away. There's like a main part of the whole book that I don't want to. There's like a mechanic that they're using that I can't give away. But it's about a guy who he lives in Brazil and he writes obituaries for a living. And he's like, his dad is a famous writer and he's kind of always wanted to be a writer. But like it kind of digs into like how he feels about. It's so hard to talk about without explaining like the central mechanic of how they wrote this book. But like there's all these like missed opportunities and overlooked like things that were really important. And it's just like it's almost like it calls you to like slow down and really appreciate life. But also like go for things. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a freaking good book.
Ask for forgiveness. Don't beg for permission. Sort of thing. Get out of your own way and go.
I think if you're listening right now and you want to read something that will really speak to you on a lot of different levels, like you can't go wrong with Day Tripper. There was one of those things where like I just went online and I was like, what's one of the best graphic novels you can read in like one day? And like just Day Tripper. I'm really happy that I read that one. Speaking of graphic novels, moving on from Day Tripper, I also started Sandman by Neil Gaiman. I bought the whole thing. I bought it all. It's time to read Sandman. I'm almost done with, I think the first volume is called Preludes and Nocturnes. Sandman is so cool. Oh my God, I'm loving it so much. Okay, let me just real quick for listeners that really like Sandman and for anybody that's been curious about it, I think both parties will appreciate what I'm about to say.
Okay.
I had no idea what the hell was going on for the first like third of this. I was like bummed out because I spent a lot of money on it. Like I bought the whole thing and I was like, man, this is really weird. Like this is really, I don't understand what, like I felt bad for like myself. And I was just like, man, I just spent all this money on this. Is this how it's all going to read? Like, is this just going to be like this mess? I don't know what the hell is happening.
A little bit of buyer's remorse.
Okay. So what happened though is like, it does click and it does gain some direction and I don't want to give it away, but like I'm past that part now and it's so cool. Like it's just when you've, it's so good. And I don't want to, so like basically at least what it seems to be about so far, and I'm sure it's about so many more things than this, but it's about this like sorcerer type guy, or he's like a leader of like, he's like an Aleister Crowley type person, attempts to trap death.
Necromancer?
Not really, kind of. He attempts to trap death, but he accidentally traps someone named Morpheus, who is the master of like the dream realm.
Totally.
Right? He's like the brother or cousin or something of death. And he traps him for like 70 years. In that process, Morpheus loses his like artifacts, like the things that make him able to be who he is, like this master of the dream realm. And so now he's trying to find all this stuff. Right. And so I'm sure it's going to branch out so much more than what I'm talking about already. But like the artwork is incredible. And like it's Neil Gaiman, y'all. Like it's Neil Gaiman. And dude, it's just, it's like the thing that made, it's the thing that put Neil Gaiman on the map.
Really? Wow.
He did it before all that other stuff that he did. And I'm sure he wrote other, I don't know what the Neil Gaiman timeline is, but like Sandman is like Neil Gaiman's Dark Tower.
Got it. If that makes sense.
I think that's a pretty good way of putting it.
I feel like going from book to graphic novel is like not the same thing at all, as far as like from a writer's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it feels, it's really cool. It's such an awesome medium. Like it really is. It's kind of like why I love video games so much, is because it combines so many different things. And I mean, regular novels will always be like the biggest chunk of my heart, but graphic novels and comics, damn. like they can really entertain you. Like, if don't sleep on those, listeners, please, like, listen to me. If you ever listened to me before, if you don't want to read graphic novels and stuff, try one out. Like, seriously, Chad, you too, man. Like, there's just, if you hit the right one, like you read like Saga or something, just if it hits so hard.
I would equate it to kind of like turning on the subtitles or watching a show in a different language, a movie in a different language, where it's like right away, you're kind of like very aware that you're reading the subtitles, not, and it's kind of getting between you and the story a little bit. But 20 minutes in,
it's a different experience.
You've forgotten that you're reading the subtitles and you're just like in it. And I think that you really kind of have to, at least for me, I know in my own experience with it, I kind of have to give it some pages and let my brain adjust to the new format so I can flow through without thinking about how to consume the content. I'm just consuming the content, and then the story flows much better for me. But there is a learning curve, or at least an adapting curve, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, Chad.
Thank you. See, thank you, man.
You can do some brevity every now and then. You know? You're capable. Okay, so I did read a lot this week, so
get ready.
So I also read another graphic novel called Squire by Sarah Alfeghi and Nadia Shamas. This was absolutely incredible as well. Just so everybody knows, if you don't know me very well, this is your first BRK podcast. I typically will talk very highly about a lot of things, but mostly because you don't see all the things that I don't finish. So like, if it seems like I just love everything, it's so not true.
I mean, we try very hard to talk about what we like and not about what we don't, because we don't want to be another complainer.
I just noticed that like this is like the third thing in a row where I've been like, this is amazing. But like, I got to talk about it because I read it and I really loved it. I'm just going to read a little bit of the back here for you instead of trying to like just get into everything. So it says, born a second-class citizen, Aiza has always dreamt of becoming a knight. It's the highest military honor in the once great Bight Saji Empire. And as a member of the recently colonized Ornu people, it's her only way to full citizenship. Now, ravaged by famine and mounting tensions between the different provinces, Bight Saji finds itself on the brink of war once again, and Aiza can finally enlist in the competitive squire training program. So this is a story about a girl who has been brought up in like a colonized and oppressed section of this land, and she has an aspiration to become a knight, or initially a squire to a knight, and then
ultimately
a knight in the army of the empire that's oppressing her people.
Wow!
Right, and it's like it's extremely interesting, very topical, and it's a beautiful book. The artwork is incredible. You can read it really, really fast. I would really recommend Squire to anybody that wants like something that's got like it's very good world building. It's beautiful. The writing is like very kind of like modern and really easy to read, but like you latch on to this main character really, really quickly. Mostly, I mean, her personality is really interesting, but like just this situation is like really messy, and you just want to see what she's going to discover about herself and the wider ramifications of what she's chosen to do. Like her family's reaction to it is interesting. It's just another really good book.
Can you shine any light onto like her, without giving the story away, like her motivations of like, obviously like you, if someone took over my country, I probably wouldn't want to go fight for them. Is it trying to like dismantle it from the inside sort of story, or her like being accepting of her place?
No,
it's
not even either of those really. Okay. It's almost like she's like obsessed with this idea of like legacy and legend.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, which is also like, it's like this middle way of just kind of like, it's so interesting. Like, it's so interesting how like our aspirations can conflict with like the real world around us. You know what I mean? And like our being like maybe misinformed on like the larger reality of what you're getting yourself into, you know? And like, it's a very, very good book, you guys. Like
people caught up in their own legend is a cool story. There's a lot of lessons to be had there, and like a lot of like, oh, don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah, and she's really young too, and like impressionable, it's a really fantastic book.
Typically, the legend, like people focused on their legacy, is like a later in the life sort of thing that you kind of start focusing on a little bit. That seems to be in our world at least. It's like weird, maybe not weird. It's not common that you find a 20-year-old who's like, man, I'm all about legacy and like the story I'm leaving behind. It's like, wow, okay. It's an interesting motivation, you know, because you won't be there to enjoy it sort of thing. And it's just like, I personally don't fully understand it a huge amount, but I'm sure as I grow older, I probably will.
Okay, one more comic graphic novel type thing. I've read so many.
Hard.
I did, yeah. Okay, so I started reading the Darth Vader. So let me back up a little bit here. Okay, so this week I went and saw, kind of on a whim, it was very impulsive. Me and Effie and my brother Vaughn went and saw The Phantom Menace, Episode 1, Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, in theaters.
So did my parents for their 45th anniversary.
That's adorable.
I know. Okay,
so we went and saw that in theaters because it's the 25th anniversary. And, so when we went and saw it, I was like, this is silly. We're spending a lot of money for a movie I've already seen. Like, whatever. But there was this distant part of me that was like, Evan, you know that this is going to be sweet. Like, you know that this is going to be awesome.
Right. Halfway through the movie, you're like, so like through the planet core.
Okay, so Phantom Menace, we don't have to get into it. It's a weird movie. Jar Jar is annoying.
I'm glad he's in there, though.
I'm not. I don't think he adds anything to the movie at all. Yeah,
I mean, they could probably find the Gungans on their own, but as a kid, I didn't look at stories so critically, I guess.
But anyway, so like we watched it and like we got to see the pod races in the theater and the final fight with Darth Maul and everything. It was awesome. After I finished it and we got home, I was like, I want more. I love Star Wars. I feel like I never get enough of it and I want more. And I was about to start the Darth Bane trilogy. And I was like, I'm already reading so many books, man. Like, I don't want to start another trilogy. Then I went online and I was like, where's a good place to start with Star Wars graphic novels? And then the Charles Soule Darth Vader books. There's 25 issues, but there's like, it's like four thickens, you know, so it's not very long at all. And I finished the first one, the first like six issues, and oh my god,
there's 24 of them. It's a real short story, guys, don't even worry about it.
It's not that long at all, because like comic, like the issues, like the little comics are like, you know, 15 pages or something. Like, they're not very long at all.
And
they're pictures, so you like, you really are moving through it pretty quickly,
almost disrespectfully, it seems sometimes.
That sometimes with the art.
Yeah, totally.
But the artwork in this is incredible. But it's Darth Vader right after the events of Revenge of the Sith, and if you don't really remember what that is, it's like when they're on, I think Mustafa is the planet, like the lava planet, and Obi-Wan like defeats Anakin. He's like, you were my brother, Anakin, I loved you, and all that stuff. So it's like right after
from my
that.
Perspective, you're evil.
So it's right after that, when at the very end of Revenge of the Sith, he's like, I'm afraid that in your anger you killed her, and he's like, no, you know. So it literally picks up like right there, and then it's like, it's, it looks like it's, you know, going from there towards A New Hope. Probably, I don't know if it's going to get to exactly there, because I think a pretty decent amount of time goes by. But
is Darth Vader the main character?
Yes. Oh, hell yes.
So it's kind of the story of his dissension of like,
oh, he's already,
because like,
he's already,
when you do something
there,
like that,
oh my god, he's so okay, he's yeah. gone. Like, Anakin is,
yeah, but you can learn.
No, dude,
yeah.
Anakin is gone. Like,
yeah, totally.
There,
yeah.
But there is,
yeah, he'll, I mean,
there
he
is
left
good
the dark
in
side
him.
In, right? He could have been like, look, the hatred of my life is already doing bad things. And then he was like, but I'm going to double down on resentment
okay.
and blame someone else.
So the this is a tiny little spoiler, but I just want to talk about Star Wars so badly. So like, do you know what lightsabers are made out of?
The crystal.
The kyber crystal.
I almost said a dilithium crystal, but I was like, nope, that's not right.
Kyber crystals, right?
Kyber crystals,
so,
that's right.
I didn't know this, and I think that this is canon, like this is real. And if I'm way wrong about this, and also Charles Soule is wrong about this, then please let me know. But the reason that the Sith's lightsabers are red is because they do this thing. They do this thing with the kyber crystals where the Sith in question, who has not gotten a crimson lightsaber yet, will go forcibly defeat defeat a Jedi and take their lightsaber, dismantle it, and then they do something which is called bleeding a kyber crystal, mm-hmm. which is where they pour all of their hatred and fear into this crystal. And so they're effectively fighting with their hatred and fear and all of that darkness.
Or at least trying to find like a bucket for it, maybe?
Sure, but they are swinging that around. You know what I mean? Like, it's their sword.
Oh, that's
like
their weapon.
It turns
sure.
into their
yeah.
weapon. And it's like,
wow.
Dude, I loved that. I was so like, that was when I was like, I'm all in for like this Charles Soule guy knows what he's talking about, and I'm so in this.
What an obviously cool metaphor, right? To be like, they're literally so taking their fear and their hatred and their negativity and using it as a weapon. But like, I would say you could use that for good. Like, there could be a healthy way of doing that, right? To like get rid of it. It's a way of processing and like not keeping that.
But you're already
you
far
yourself
enough along in that process that you wouldn't be able to be a force for good with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's
so
like with
they,
like horcruxes.
I guess what's why do they do that?
I'm not sure. I don't really know exactly. Okay. I don't know. It didn't really dig too much into like the why of it.
Huh. Maybe like maybe pouring homage to the.
I don't know. Palpatine was just like, this is what you got to do. Like, you got to go get one of those. Right. And then Vader's just like, yes, whatever you say. Like, I'm totally yours now. You know, but there is a moment.
It fundamentally in any way, like makes it more powerful or.
Well, it's interesting. There is a moment where the way that the comic was drawn, like it seemed like Darth Vader had kind of been like, no, I'm not going to do that. But it was like his last kind of, I could.
That's like, so obviously not something I should do.
It was like his last kind of like grasp at goodness, you know?
Right. Fork in the
but
road.
I mean, the cool thing about Return of the Jedi and like the main Star Wars movies is like Luke is so convinced that there's good in his dad, you know, even if Anakin doesn't believe it, Palpatine doesn't believe it. Nobody really believes it, but like Luke knows. You know, and so that's like the beautiful thing about those movies. One of the beautiful things about those movies. I freaking love Star Wars so much. Like, it's not like my main thing that I nerd out on, but like the way that the fan base has taken those dorky ass movies and turned it into like this force, if you'll pardon the pun, and turned it into like the phenomenon. Like, it's such a fan made thing. You know, like. Like totally. All of these books and all of the like every book that I've read, all the comics I've read, all the stuff that I've looked at online and stuff that's in the same universe as Star Wars. It's just it's so awesome. And like, you know, the Disney movies aren't great. Like episode 9 is bad. It's like legitimately bad. It's a bad movie. I think 7 and 8 are fine because I rewatched them a little bit ago. Force Awakens is just like a revamped New Hope, obviously. And then I think that The Last Jedi is like pretty decent, actually. Like, I think Rian Johnson gets a lot of flack, and it's like a pretty good movie. You know, like it's a little silly. Like the whole casino thing is like kind of.
I'll have to.
Dude, watch The Last Jedi again. It's a pretty good movie.
Really?
It's pretty
like,
solid.
I don't really remember walking away from any of the new ones being like sweet. Like, in fact, there's a few I was like, that was objectively a terrible way. Like, there's like obvious really missed bad opportunities to make meaning happen, and then they just like didn't.
Oh, there's like 8-hour YouTube videos about why those movies are garbage, and like every point it's just like point after point after point after point.
Yeah.
But that's, again, it feeds into what I was talking about though. It's like how the fans have just created such an incredible franchise from, I mean, I think it's so owed to the fans and the people that put so much work into Star Wars. That includes all the people that have made, like, you know, like The Mandalorian and Andor and like all these incredible shows. But okay, so those were all the.
I spent this entire time kind of wondering about the like why of the bleeding of the lightsaber, right? Because it doesn't. I looked it up. And canon says it doesn't make it more powerful or really change its like function in any way. And I think that for me in my own experience dealing with pain and hatred and anger, and like, I'm like, yeah, it's nice to have an output for it. So you don't replay that track over and over and you don't allow it to poison you some way, but what they're not putting it behind them, which is why I thought like, maybe it's a healthy thing they're doing.
In front of them.
And so why are they Sith? But they're literally putting it into a keepsake. It's like more like a serial killer taking a part of their victim. You know, it's like they're as a memento. It's like they're, The lightsaber should be the thing that you use to battle evil with, and instead they're perverting that and making it like their companion that's made out of the worst parts of them that they go then use to destroy other people. And it's like, no, it's not healthy and getting rid of it. It's actually doubling down and now turning it into something that you can cause more of that in the world with, which is like a really cool like meta commentary on darkness, right? And like what to do with it and how you can let it pervert you and use it as a weapon.
It's
just,
you know, it's funny, I've seen a lot of different takes as to like why the Empire isn't all bad, you know. And like, I personally don't subscribe to that. Like, I mean, I
who's saying that?
And there's like a whole subreddit that's like the Empire did nothing wrong, and it like explains, like, it's just like all
wow.
I know. I
mean, they destroyed actual planets.
That's the thing. It's like there's all because like the Jedi aren't great either. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's like a lot in
get a little controlly,
but like also like they blew up Alderaan. They just exploded that. Like a billion people.
The Jedi have like a sub lesson of like, yeah, sometimes too dogmatic of beliefs can lead us into some bad places. But like the Sith are like actually pure evil. Yeah. And in fact, well, manifesting it into the weapons they use to take out and inflict their evil on others.
It's funny, though. Like, I do agree with the idea of, for the most part, that only the Sith deal in absolutes. But also, they blew up a planet. So they're absolutely horrible.
They're absolutely bad.
Okay,
yeah.
So,
and don't they have to like kill their master at some point in order to?
Okay,
like,
I don't know. That's I think that's explored in the Darth Bane trilogy, like the rule of two and everything. How there's always a
One.
I don't know. I need to read those.
Or there's always two.
There's so much. It's just a big giant chasm of Star Wars lore that you can.
Seems kind of like a major hitch. Like if evil is like, yeah, but there can only be evil two evils. It's like, well, you're not going to be expanding that evil very
like,
fast.
Let's move on.
okay we like a lot of evil in one area. Okay.
So okay, another book that I read, very cozy, very cool. I'm really happy that I read it. It's very short. It was like 150 pages. Days at the Murasaki Bookshop. It's Satoshi Yagasawa. Wow, what that was recommended to me months ago when I was going through like a cozy reading phase and I skipped it. Wish I hadn't skipped it. I'm really glad that I read it now. It's about a young girl who I think she's like 20 something, like 23, 24. She's in a relationship, doesn't work out. She's really sad. And then she goes and lives with her uncle who's running a bookstore in, I think, Tokyo, in like this neighborhood she's never really been in. It's so warm and cozy and bookshoppy and like it's just personal. And like, I don't really have much else to say about it. I mean, you should read it. It just left me feeling like so good.
I am literally putting it in my phone as listed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super quick read. It's like a novella. It's like 150 pages. But I loved it so much. It was really good.
Dude, man, I think as a collective, I think we're so stoked on like cool, cozy.
Yep. More of kinda, it, please.
Yeah, give me some more of that, man. I really like those sort of stories. It's just like nice and easy and cozy and got some good lessons in there and doesn't like lead us into this like battle of good and evil. I think people are really resonating with that right now.
Not everything's life or death, Jim. I want to be comfortable. Nice little office joke there. Okay, so last thing that I want to bring up, I finished the first Mistborn book. Man, what a killer book. Like it's just like open and shut, cool, like awesome ending. Things really ramp up. It's just I just love it. I just love Mistborn. It was great on a second read. I'm excited to move on with the series. I just have like this new kind of like lust for life with this series. You know what I mean? I just have like this whole new approach for that after having read so many books between when I stopped reading it years ago and when I'm reading it now. And, you know, I mean, I do think that as cool as the magic system is, it does kind of like, I feel like Vin, I don't want to spoil it, but most people that are listening have read Mistborn, but I don't know. She like takes to it like really quickly. Like really, it's like just swallow this stuff and off you go, you know, and just like throw these coins around.
Gulp,
and like, and it's
I'm
just
awesome,
like,
yeah,
it's just like, yeah, she just burned it. And like this happened. And it's like, I don't know.
Right. Power is always better earned.
The thing is like, that's just like my super hypercritical pants on, because like, also it's just so freaking awesome. Like, it's just like Allomancy is just so cool. Like, it's just, the world building is really awesome. Like this idea that like the idea of the mist and everything, I don't want to spoil too much about that for anybody that's about to read it, but the way that Sanderson ties the world building into the story and everything is just fantastic. And then the little things at the very beginnings of the chapter are like, they're so mysterious and like sad at the same time. And like, there's just, it just really showcases Sanderson and his ability to just really sit you down and be like, trust me, this is gonna be really cool.
Long time ago, like, and just like, oh, yep, I'm here
exactly.
For this.
So I'm just so excited for Mistborn.
if we were still doing Friday Forge episodes, I would say we should do this. Maybe we should find spend some time and find some good ones or something, and make a section of the Monday Morning Minute about it, because I really respect, or have a lot of respect for, authors who do that at the beginning of their chapters. We'll have a little blurb or something like from
Josiah Bancroft stuff.
Good. Wise books of the thing, or like the travel guide and Josiah Bancroft's books. And in my recent past, the Combat Codes does that too, where he like does from the Combat Codes, like the manuscript of this old school, like no one's really fighting under. He has some really wise ones that are like really applicable to fighting. Like there's one that I don't say it as elegantly as he is, but he's talking about in jiu-jitsu that if you're trying to manipulate someone's wrist, you need to isolate their elbow. If you want to manipulate their elbow, you need to isolate their shoulder, because you can't get that thing unless you have control over the thing above it. And that's like really applicable in life sometimes. It's like, it's not the thing. Sometimes we fix the symptoms, and that's not the way to gain power over the thing. It's the thing above it. And honestly, I never had it quite so clearly explained to me, like that's actually going to help my jiu-jitsu game, because he's true.
And
you can't attack the ankle without controlling the knee.
Oh man, that's so cool. And it's just a little snippet right before the chapter. It's like not even the real story. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you're good at writing stories, not like inspirational, quippy wisdom chunks, you know? Yeah, like it's a totally different skill set. It's cool that they can do that. And I often wonder, like, do you just have a collection of those sitting around? Or like Josiah in the middle of the night, you wake up, you're like, wisdom. Man,
some of the Josiah Bancroft stuff was just like, it's just so many banger lines that he used, that it was just like, all right, now let's move on to the chapter, like the real book I'm writing.
Dude, there was like actual life. You can tell he's like going through something, and then he like writes the summarized solution to it. I remember we asked him in our interviewing, and he was like, yeah, no, I struggled a lot on those. Like, so not only is it cool to have the skill, but apparently it takes, I mean, obviously it takes a lot of a different skill, but equally difficult in order to do it. And I've got a lot of respect for a cool quip.
What was, like, there's one of them that Bancroft said, it was like, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was like, imperfect action is better than perfect potential or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was just man, you're so cool.
Basically, like, doing something and kind of failing at it is better than, like, not addressing the thing at all.
Just, like, wanting it to be perfect, but so you don't do anything. You know,
right. Or like, you know, waiting until like, oh, I'm going to wait till I hit the gym before I start running, because I don't want to embarrass myself with a running group or something. It's like, man, no, but like the way that you'll get better at running is running with the group. Like,
okay. So that's all the stuff that I read, which was a lot. Yeah. It was definitely it was a very cool week. But then also, told you about the, Phantom Menace. And then also, because we went to the movie theater and we saw the trailer for the new, Planet of the Apes movie, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I think is what it's called. Effie mentioned that she had never seen the new ones. And I was like, oh my God, we have to watch those. Like, they're so cool. So we watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes last night, the one with James Franco in it. And Andy Serkis, funny enough that we were talking about him earlier, but who plays Caesar, I believe. But yeah, we watched that one, and then a little bit of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes last night, but we went to sleep. But man, those movies are great. Have you seen those?
I don't know if I have. There's a lot of those movies that have been.
Okay, let me just clear this up real quick, because Effie was really confused. So.
yeah, clear it up for me here.
So 1968. gosh, I'm such a dork.
I love that.
Such
you
a
know
dork.
This. Hit me, baby.
The
going.
Birth of cinema. Okay, so in 1968, we had the Charlton Heston movie, which came out. And everybody was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then there were like four sequel movies, like Beneath the Planet of the Apes and whatever. Like, there's like, they get like progressively, they don't get worse, but they're not as good.
They get worse.
They're not as good as the Charlton Heston, or I think Charlton Heston might be in another, whatever. The first one is really, really amazing. It's legendary, and it's aged pretty well. It's a pretty good movie. Like, if you haven't watched it, it's for a
you're talking about the Heston one, like not the remake.
We'll get to that, Chad.
okay.
So like, the Charlton Heston one's really cool, and then the ones after it are like kind of cool, but like I haven't watched all of them. They're like whatever. Watch them if you want to. Then Tim Burton came along with old Marky Mark, and then they made this remake, or reimagining or whatever, of the 1968 movie, which is like, it's wacky. It's like one of the worst good movies. It's like one of the best bad movies I've ever watched. Like, it's a very weird movie, but it's pretty cool. Like, it's definitely worth a watch, you know? But then these new movies, if you've never seen these, they're like prequel movies that I think are like canon, like they're lined up with the ones from the 60s, I'm pretty sure. But it explains like how these apes took over the world, you know. And so it's a prequel, and it's like a whole prequel series. And the first one is like, it's interesting. Like, we were watching last night, and I'd only seen it like once before, and Effie didn't really like seem that into it at first. And I was like, why does it, like, what's up with this? Like, what is, and then I realized like, oh, they have to like really fast track through all the human stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they, mm-hmm. like, they really have to, like, because it's not that interesting. Like, the James Franco stuff, like, no. with his dad and stuff, it's just, like, it's really not that interesting at all. Like, what's really interesting are these hyper-intelligent chimpanzees and orangutans and gorillas and stuff. And so it was just kind of, like, the first half of the first movie, if you've never watched them before, you just make it to the second half. I promise you, it gets, like, way more interesting. And then the end of the next, the animation is just, like, it's ridiculous. Like, it looks so good. And that's a movie from like,
and which ones are we talking about? The 2011,
yeah, so in 2011 the new one, Rise came out, and then 2014 was Dawn, 2017 Dawn. Was War, and then 7 years has gone by since War, and Kingdom just came out in theaters. War and Dawn both have really high like Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes scores and stuff. This new one is seeming to be a little bit getting panned a little bit. I think it's like the lowest rated one of the four so far, but I'm gonna go see it because I bet it's really cool.
Maybe I should give him another shot, because
get into the
I remember
second
walking
one.
Away with
get into the second one.
Okay,
yeah, it's wacky.
Okay, I should start with 2001. Is that what I'm saying? Start there and then go on.
Have you seen the Tim Burton one?
I think so. I don't remember. It's been a while.
Okay, watch it if you want to. I won't tell you either way.
But like, if you had to direct what I'm going to
watch,
you should watch
Rise and then watch the new ones. Like the 2001 one is cool, but like, it's, you know.
You're right. Start 2011 and on. And that's, what is that?
Three movies, and then you can go see the new one in theaters. Yeah.
Yeah. So four. I think my problem with them, and maybe I have a misunderstanding as to their movies at their core, but I've always kind of walked away with the idea that at the core of those movies, there's like the time for humans is done. We messed up too much, and like, it's now the time of the apes to who can like maybe do it better than we did. And I find that to be kind of a nihilistic, like defeatist sort of like, nope, let's take out the humans. It's time for another race to give it a shot because we made too many mistakes. And while that is true, we have done some terrible things. I want to hear a story of redemption, not like let's pass the baton off because we can't sort of thing. And I just kind of find it to be a little nihilistic and not personally inspiring. But I could be wrong as to the core of those movies, but I tend to not super gravitate towards the like humans aren't the answer sort of thing. It's like, well, that sucks because like I am a human. And
yeah, I think the word, not necessarily nihilistic, is like misanthropic. I think that's the
misanthropic. Yeah, I think that's maybe the word. I don't know what that
means.
It
means kind of like you don't like the human race, you know. You don't.
Oh, yeah, disliking humankind and avoiding human society. Yeah. You nailed it.
So
totally. Yeah, you're totally right. That's 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe, I think that's, especially if you watch the first, like the Charlton Heston one, you know, like the maniacs. Like, yeah, I mean, like it's
we're like awful.
Yeah, I mean, like pretty lame. Like, I mean,
right. But now let's rise above it. Like I said, it's lazy.
I don't think it's lazy. I mean, I think
it's not lazy.
I think what it is.
It's not helpful.
Maybe. I mean, like, I think, I see your point. I mean, I think also, especially, so think about like when, I'm going to try to say this without spoiling the end of a 60-year-old movie, but like, think about like when the first Planet of the Apes movie came out. It was like the height of the Cold War. You know what I mean? Like, I think that like a lot of sentiment was like, man, are we about to blow this up? You know what I mean? Like, are we really?
There might be hope in the idea of like, it's not all dead, even because we're dead.
What they might've been getting at is just kind of like a, you know, like humans had their shot and then like blew it. And then apes kind of took over and were able to form their own society. But then they also have their own issues too. You know what I mean? Right, and like, that's how I've looked at, especially the new ones too, where it's like, they're trying to figure it out. Like, you know, forming a civilization isn't easy. There's no perfect way to do it. And, you know, that's kind of how I was looking at it, but like also it is a little misanthropic. I mean, it definitely is a little bit like, you know, you maniacs, you blew it up, you know?
Yeah. And while that's not incorrect, like I'm with him on that front, I just don't think the answer is, like I said, handing the baton off, or it's not helpful to me. And I really appreciate maybe people getting second chances, right? Because we all make mistakes, and I appreciate the another pathway to reveal itself where redemption can be found without utter removal of that.
Humans are still there,
weird, like,
you know, we're just the roles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, I think that one of the things that
it's like the elves leaving. It's like, come on.
I know. I always thought that was so sad. But you know what's funny? It's like I'm re-listening to, you know, because I'm like kind of always listening to Lord of the Rings. But like I was re-listening to a chapter, and it was like chapter 2 of Fellowship, read by Andy Serkis, who does an amazing job at it, by the way. But there's just like this part where they're kind of like in the Green Dragon and they're talking, and Sam's just like, oh, the elves are like leaving. And it's just so funny because, like, all the people in the Shire are like, yeah, well, elves are going to elve, you know, like, whatever. But,
right,
like,
right,
it's
right.
Just funny because I feel like they should have been like, should we be leaving? Like, if the...
right, right, right. Like, why? Why are they leaving? Yeah. And, like, yeah. I always kind of didn't understand it, too. Like, okay, like, they're, like, leaving, but... Because, like, it's mentioned both in the books and the movies, like, the time for humans has come. And it's like, but why? Like, is the dwarves are still around? Hobbits are still around? Like, do they not have a time that they get to be? It's like, I like, maybe we can just all share the time and not have to be one or the
like
other.
If, like, all the millionaires in the United States just, like, slowly started leaving, you know? I feel like everyone would be like, right. Why are you guys leaving?
Like, what do you know that I don't here? You know, like, you guys have been around for thousands of years, and just now you're like, we've gonna go to utopia. Peace out. Like,
oh, magic is leaving or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's always kind of sad of a narrative that, like, magic is leaving and it's the humans' fault. Like, man, I would love to read a story about where, like, the humans bring magic back or something, you know?
Chad, I love how much of an optimistic humanist you are. It really,
to my dying
really,
day,
it tickles me. I spend a lot of time on the internet, and maybe it's warped my view a little bit, but when I watch Planet of the Apes, I'm like,
as much hope.
I mean,
maybe.
When I watch Planet of the Apes, I'm just like, yeah, like, give the apes a shot. Like, we had our chance. Like, yeah, we couldn't stop building those explodey things and throwing them at each other. Like, maybe they won't do it, you know? But yeah, it is they're really fascinating. It's funny that you mentioned that, though, because while I was watching it last night and I was thinking about, you know, just like Planet of the Apes as like a franchise, you know, I think there is kind of like a certain, you know, distance there with the audience where it's just kind of like, I don't really have anyone to really latch onto with this. Like, right, I just, you know, it's like, it's apes, and like, yes, we are descended from apes, and there's a certain, that's the connection there, obviously. I mean, when I certainly am personally like really fascinated by gorillas and orangutans and bonobos and all kinds of primates that we're distantly related to. I mean, it is fascinating to like see humanity in like
their social structures. Like,
did you read that thing recently? Scientists observed I think it was an orangutan, but it might have been a chimpanzee, heal themselves. They got a cut on their body, and then they used a plant to
like a poultice.
Yeah.
What?
Chad's like,
wow,
dude, they're really, really smart, and like, why wouldn't they like start, you know? I mean, obviously they're not going to start like building cities and stuff, but like, I mean, that's, I think that's one of the other things that it poses with and Children of Time kind of tackles this a little bit too, but like this idea that like, okay, well, if there were some sort of vacuum left by humans, wouldn't it stand to reason, you know what I mean, that like another civilization would crop up out of something really smart? I mean, like, we don't understand animal intelligence in this.
No.
Well, I guess I don't mean to say we don't understand it, but I think that we tend to look at intelligence through our own prism, you know, and it's like animals are extremely intelligent, like dolphins are really smart. Like octopuses are super, like elephants, elephants
structures
are like ridiculously smart, dude. Like, but they don't have opposable thumbs
and like emotional.
You know, like elephants, like, you know, probably they could probably form like extremely emotional and, you know, mentally incredible societies in their own way, but it wouldn't look like ours. But just because it doesn't look like ours does not mean that it's not as smart as ours. It's just not smart in the same way as ours, you know?
Right.
It's interesting.
Because, like, they don't have opposable thumbs or whatever,
but,
yeah.
But chimpanzees and orangutans and bonobos and gorillas do, so... that's
yeah, totally. Totally. Do you, can you imagine like the change that you would have on like your outlook on life if you interacted with the world with something on your face? You know, like your nose is like your main way of touching and interacting with the world around you. I wonder how that would affect your experience of it. You know,
I think about stuff like that all the time.
I know, me too. I think that there's something to be said for, again, what exists in the realm of what we don't know. I think there's an arrogance kind of that. Modern scientists and probably we've always had, but there's this like idea that like we've figured it out. It's like, man, we're observing, like we observed, we thought there was only one animal that was like smart enough to use tools for the longest time. And like, that's actually totally wrong. We've observed tons of animals, using tools and objects to better themselves. And yes, maybe they're watching us and getting them from it, but like, maybe not. Maybe they're just like, something exists in the realm of what we don't know that adds a whole level of understanding to like the level that they operate on.
We have some crows. Like Effie and I live on a third story apartment and we have a tree right outside of our balcony. And we have like this murder of crows that they, it's like the same like four or five crows that we feed them, and they are extremely smart, and like they bring us stuff, and like they follow us around the neighborhood. Like if Effie and I go outside, like go walk to the store or something, they'll like follow us for like a block.
I heard that if you like go about doing what it sounds like you guys are doing, which is give them gifts and stuff, they'll start bringing you gifts.
Yeah,
they'll start
attacking
people who come onto your territory that aren't you.
Yeah, they haven't done that, but they brought us like we found like a, it was like an animal bone in the, we have like a little tray out for them. And they brought like little pieces of like trash kind of, but like not, it wasn't like
totally shiny things.
They haven't brought anything shiny yet, but I do know that a lot of crows will keep an eye out for like coins and dollar bills and stuff like that on the ground.
Totally. So how did you, what was your first offering to the crows?
So Effie's kind of taken point on the crows because I wake up a lot later than she does. So she like, Effie has like a whole routine in the morning where she like wakes up and
this is awesome.
And, like, she's such a crow bro.
Crow bro.
If there's any other crow bros listening, please hit Effie up in the Discord because she would love to nerd out about it. But so Effie is waging a war against the squirrels right now because Effie hates the squirrels because they keep taking all the crows' food. And I'm on team squirrel kind of, because I'm like, hey, like, you know, like if the squirrels get there before the crows, you know, like,
right, like the other people have wings, dude, like you can't win, like what the heck, the crows, you know, like it seems a little bit like, man, you,
what I do like about the crows is that they definitely the way that they kind of like talk to each other is incredibly interesting. Like it's like the other day one of them flew up and I can see them from my kitchen, like out on my balcony, so one of them flew up and like was at the tray that we have out for them, and he kind of like landed there, and then like he like looked at me and then like pecked a few times at the middle of the empty tray, right? And so I was like, all right,
wow, he wanted
totally
something.
Yeah. And so I went out, I grabbed a piece of sausage and I like went out and I cut it with some scissors like into like really small little pieces, and so he like flew from the tray to the tree across really close to our balcony. And he just kind of like sat there and watched me like cutting it up. And then he like chirped like once at me. And then he flew off to a different tree where some other crows were. And he called out like three. It was like, ka, ka, ka. And then they all flew over when I went back inside. Yeah.
Whoa.
It's really.
He shared.
Yeah. No, he was like, he observed. He like said, hey, I want this. I went out and did it. And he watched me do it. And then he flew and told his friends. And then they all came back and ate it.
Wow, that's amazingly high level of cognitive ability and like social
so many intelligence, things, you know, like a lot of things have to happen for all that.
Yeah, that's nuts. I'm gonna, they can like remember things in the past from like way on, and then they can like pass on that information to their offspring.
Yeah,
so like crows were harassed apparently by like a bunch of masked scientists.
Oh wow.
And then their generations later, the crows were like still new to avoid those masked scientists because they were being observed and over time. And that's amazing.
Did you know that they'll memorize? So like this has been observed. I don't know if all crows do this, but it's been observed that crows will hang out at street intersections and they'll drop like nuts that have that they're having a hard time getting nuts open. They'll drop it in front of cars at a red light because they know that on a green light those cars will run over the nuts, and then they also know that they can go back down when the light turns red so that they can go pick up the nuts again and they won't get hit by a car.
Wow. Dude, that's some like complicated they've been observed putting stones into water to raise the water level so they can drink out of things.
That's like, a definite thing that they all
do. It's
like
understanding displacement. Mm-hmm. Like, that's wild. And like, I don't know exactly how they think about it, but like, however they think about it, it's not wrong and it's helping them. And that's crazy.
It's funny. Like, so Effie and I moved not very far away from our old place. So our old house is in, we live in the Hollywood district in Portland, and we lived like, I think like 15 blocks from where we live now. So we didn't move that far at all. But our crows in our old neighborhood were like scrappy crows, you know, like they were like they were really friendly. They were really friendly crows, and like they would come right up on the porch and like hang out with us and stuff, and they would eat whatever we put out. Like, they would eat anything that we put out. And then our new crows are like bougie crows. They're like a lot bigger. They're bigger crows, and they're like very sleek. Like, their feathers are a lot nicer, and they're shiny crows, and they are very picky about what they eat. Like, because and so Effie and I have noticed that our neighbors,
dude,
it's so wild. So like, we've noticed that like in this neighborhood where we're living now, a lot more people are feeding the crows, right? And so our theory is that people are out here spoiling the crows. And so when we come out, we're like, you guys want some peanuts? They're just like, peanuts? Like, we got like raw beef from this other person. Like, you got anything better than
peanuts? Right. This person gave me like organic, like Wagyu, like farm bred.
Effie went to Whole Foods, and Effie doesn't eat beef really very often, or at least she doesn't really buy it. We're like at the store, and I noticed that she grabbed this like $11 like piece of beef, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, why do you? And she's like, it's for the crows. And I was just like, Effie,
wow. You're like, we don't even get the $11 like slab of beef.
I was like, were you trying to outcompete like our neighbors for the crows' affection,
dude? I mean, whatever you're into. I wonder if she knows them so well that she can tell one from the other.
I mean,
please don't cancel me. I don't want to be a crow racist, but I have trouble telling crow from crow.
I think Effie's relationship with the crows is much more intimate than mine. They think that I'm like I'm like the dumb crow that lives with her, you know.
Like, they're like, we're not sure why she chose this ape as a mate, but we are going to take their free stuff and try to trick him occasionally into giving him
I hope there's a crow out there that's like vouching for me, like, no, he gave me sausage one time, man, that guy's cool.
Yeah, dude, hey, you know, he's not that bad, guys, okay, let's keep in mind.
But yeah, I brought like pistachios out once, and they were just like not having it, and I was like a little offended, you know. I was like, come on, you guys,
what do crows naturally eat?
I think they really like meat.
Okay, are they bottom feeders? Like, they kind of clean
up?
No,
I don't think so. I think
they're omnivorous and eat whatever is available.
I've never seen a crow eating like roadkill. At least I personally haven't. I don't know if that's a thing that they do. But yeah,
it looks like everything.
Yeah, they'll eat whatever. But
I'm sure they probably
these crows,
can, like you said.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, like
yeah,
these
yeah,
bougie
yeah, yeah.
crows are like
these bougie. High society crows.
And they're really pretty, you know.
Wearing cardigans and like scarves and stuff.
Okay, let's move on from crows. Do you have a fun fact? We could wrap this up.
I do have a fun fact. Yeah. So I teased everyone last week about the largest book that's ever been published before. And this is called Bhutan. It is a visual odyssey across the last Himalayan kingdom. And this massive book was published in 2017 and measures 5 feet by 7 feet, and it weighs 133 pounds. And it basically just features photographs about the like content of about like the culture and landscapes and tradition of the Himalayan kingdom of Bhutan. And we were talking about meta commentaries earlier about like the way that a story is written can like help you experience something that the character is writing. Well, this is kind of like that, in that like they wanted to show the diversity of this culture by putting it in a medium that like is commonly accepted, like a book, but in a very different style of book. So they can be like, look at the like value in different cultures and diversity.
Damn, that's really cool.
Which I thought that was kind of cool, that not only did they make a cool thing that displays like the differences in diversity and culture about literally like you can see pictures and read about it, but it's also like the book itself is saying like, but look, I'm different than everything else too. You know, it's like kind of cool, but I still fit in. I'm still a book, you know?
To hop on top of this.
Maybe I'm taking
I think you're awesome, Chad.
Thank you.
To hop on this a little bit. So this is not the biggest book in like the form that you're talking. You're talking about like a book.
Right. This has been published.
This is interesting. I typed in which is the world's largest book. And it says here, in 2013, UNESCO plaque indicating that the Maha Lakamarezine or Kuthada inscription shrines at Kuthada Pagoda, which contained the world's largest book in the form of 729 marble slabs, which are inscribed on which are inscribed the Tripitaka, which were inscribed on the onto the memory of the world register. So sorry, that was a mess of words there, but I don't think marble slabs really count. That's not something you could I mean, I guess practically it's published for people to read if they go there.
Right, but you're not like right, buying exactly. For copies of them. Well, you can buy this book.
It was interesting to see. They're like, these 729 marble slabs. That's a book.
This book, The Bhutan, The Visual Odyssey Across the Last Himalayan Kingdom, which seems like a mouthful, though I guess for a book, maybe that's a sub-commentary about the book size. You can buy it for $99 on Amazon.
That's not even that much.
I know. I wonder if Prime will ship that to you for free. That seems kind of crazy.
Prime will ship anything. We're not shilling for Amazon, by the way. Like,
no, we're not.
Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely, this thing is massive. Not. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. 133 pounds. I'm not going to make the poor Amazon driver haul that up my stairs.
Dude, it's so funny to see like the differences in drivers, right? Like we have like not a very long walkway to the home, but there's some drivers that like you have to go up like a couple steps to get to like the porch, and about 70% of the time they place it all the way up near the door, and then sometimes they just like leave it at the bottom of the walkway, which is like very like if you're walking by you would just grab it and go, like you could totally steal it, you know. Maybe I shouldn't judge the drivers, maybe having a rough day or something, but I was like, really, you couldn't take it all the way to the, like, you're so close to doing a great job, why would you only do like kind of an adequate job?
Have you ever had any packages stolen?
I never have. Yeah,
it's happened to me. If you somebody sent us
yeah,
it's so lame, somebody sent us some artwork like a couple like last year. I think it was from one of our followers from Scotland. I'm sorry if I'm misremembering your name, but yeah, they sent us some really awesome art and they gave me the tracking number and everything, and I think I was at work or something, and I came home and it was gone. It's just like, wow. Man, like, I hope you liked your art.
Yeah, that super sucks. Here's how awesome Bend is. Not that Bend doesn't have its share of totally real problems, but it's just such an isolated little community, and it's just so quaint and maybe naive, but like it's wonderful. And I had a laptop that I sent in that was like under warranty, and I got it fixed, and they sent it back like not even to my house. They sent it to someone who lived in an apartment about four blocks away, and that person found me. Because I put they called me. I had my phone number was on there for some reason. And this is a laptop that like is now a fully functioning laptop that they had it. They didn't know it was not for them. And so they opened it up and they're like, there's a laptop in here. And then found me and gave me back my laptop, which I was really impressed with. Like, what a move, you know, because it'd be kind of tempting to be like free new laptop. You know? And they knew what it was and everything. And
that's so
and
nice.
They're living in kind of a low income area. Like they totally could have, and I was very blessed that they returned it to me. So thank you.
It's integrity right there,
dude. That's integrity right there. Yeah.
Speaking of mail, okay. People that are now living in my old house that I lived in like 6 months ago, if you're listening to this, what the hell? And I know you're listening right now, people that are inhabiting the house I used to live in.
If we talk about them, so they're listening.
I went over there because somebody messaged me on like Facebook Messenger. I think they like looked me up on Instagram. I don't know what the hell it was, but somebody messaged me and they were like, hey, I live in your old house. You've got some packages on the front porch. And I was like, hey, that was nice of them. Like, cool. Like, I'm going to go grab those packages. So like, I went over there and it was three packages and all of them were open. Like, yeah, I know. What? I know. Like,
so they like made sure they didn't want it first.
I don't know what the hell. Like,
dude, that's
it was
very illegal.
Okay, yeah,
like a federal.
Should I report them?
I mean, they did give him back, but like if it was $20, they probably wouldn't have.
I don't know, man. I didn't know how to feel about it.
Why else would you
like,
open him?
I was like, you hit me up and told me like just keep the books at that point.
Right.
I don't know. I thought it was weird. Yeah, I didn't know if it was illegal, but like as soon as I came home, Effie was like, "That's illegal. You can't do that."
Yeah. The only person that I would kind of excuse is like some people just like can't not know. They're like so
it was like
curious,
so obviously a book
them,
though. You know what I mean? It was three books. It was books that were sent to me by publishers because I hadn't updated my address with them.
Maybe there's some drugs.
I don't know. Sometimes like publishers just like send me stuff like without emailing me or anything, and
totally.
So I had to like, it was very inconvenient for me because I had to walk 15 blocks, and I was already on my way somewhere else. But
like, don't steal other people's things, and also like don't poke your nose where it doesn't belong.
Yeah, I mean you don't know.
Yeah, it's like great, you get the points for like returning the thing, but like you kind of like removed some of those points by like putting your like why into question.
Yeah,
like you only decided to be a good person after you discovered it was something that you didn't want.
And you're lucky I'm a book influencer. What if I was like an anthrax influencer? You know,
anthrax influencer, and I've just. Companies sending me chemical weapons in the mail to test out.
You know, come on, careful opening other people's mail, y'all. You have no idea,
dude. For real, though.
I think we gotta go. This is a long one.
I think we gotta go. This is a long, juicy one. Everyone, thanks so much for continuing the AI art conversation that we had last week. I really enjoyed reading the discussion. Everyone was so kind to each other, and it was like a very healthy.
And it's a controversial subject too. You know, like
People can get heated, like, because it's their job and stuff.
Absolutely.
And there was just a really, like, loving disagreement that was continued on. I probably is still going on. And I jumped in there a little bit and just, like, really liked some people's takes on it. So thanks so much for continuing that. Evan and I's opinions, though, typically fully, completely cover every topic that we mentioned on this podcast, man, which is obviously not the case at all. It was really nice to hear kind of a wider range of opinions on that and kind of see what the average person is thinking out there. And so please keep doing that. I really find that has a lot of value, and I love it when we can involve people in the creative process here and then talk about it on the podcast. That really helps and reminds us that we're not just like two dudes talking to our microphones, you know,
which we really are.
Well, we're really not, dude. There's a community
that
is thriving beneath us.
Thank you, everybody.
It's so cool. I'm so convinced that like the community side of the Discord can add so much more value to our listeners than like these episodes actually can add to them, you know. Like we can't have one without the other, but I think there's some real good value. If you're into book and you like book people, go check out the Discord because the community is thriving.
Yep. We also have a Patreon, everybody, and it helps out a whole bunch with getting these episodes out. And so if you have the means, please help us out with that. And I'm going to go, what am I reading? I'm going to go read some more Darth Vader stuff. Oh, I'm going to read Sandman. Yeah, I'm going to go read some Sandman.
Yeah, dude, it has a show, right? I watched like the first episode of the show and was like, I think I want to read this first.
It's weird. All right, cool. Well, buddy, until next time, everybody keep an eye out for some more episodes. We're going to try our very best to get a Throne of Glass episode out this week. But until next Monday Morning Minute, I hope you all have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.